Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM here in Round Lake Heights. Man, got a good show today for you. Set up, you know, I say that every week. I hope that it's true most of the time, anyways, when I say that. I see people already on justin.tv/WRLR. Adrienne, thank you. Good morning to you as well. Man, you know, I can't resist. We're winning today. We're winning. We're running on tiger blood. Of course, you know, I was commenting to the sports guys. I couldn't believe they threw a whole show without making reference to our favorite drug-addled superstar Charlie Sheen, but be that as it may, we've got a lot of actual tech stuff that's been going on this week. Now it is going to be just me again this week. I'm flying solo, although with our good friend Jay Garman is going to jump in here in a little bit with some geek trivia and other sorts of great stuff. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, things happening in the news with technology, iPad 2s, malware, Android versus RIM. Oh my gosh, tigers and bears. It's all coming together today. Good stuff all the way through. And then, of course, as always, some fantastic cool sites of the week ending us up, and then a podcast only song of the week as well. So you want to stick around for all of that. Keep it tuned here to 98.3. Don't forget, you can always find us as well. If you miss a few minutes of the show, you can always find us on techtalk.wrlr.fm. And not only do we have the recorded podcast of the shows, you can sign up for getting that automatically on iTunes. I've been getting a lot of emails, Facebook posts, and all sorts of good stuff because I have not been keeping up on getting those cranked out. I apologize. You'd think I just have nothing else to do during the day but crank through these podcasts and produce and edit them and get them ready for consumption. But sadly, maybe it's just an organizational issue. I don't know. I'm a big fan of David Allen getting things done. You can always find his stuff. I just got his ebook. We were talking last week about ebooks. I just, you know what? The more I use my Kindle now, the more excited I am about ebooks. Even when I got the Kindle, And I did get some emails this last week, too, questioning about the Kindle and so on. Our good friend Lou out in Australia, I know, has got one as well. And he's been using it and does not regret the choice. The options right now from the big major competitors, you've got your Kindle, you've got your Kobo, and you've got your Nook. The Kobo I would highly recommend thinking long and hard about purchasing at this point, because as we know, Borders is going bankrupt, and Borders is the one that supports the Kobo. So just like with the kind of the smartphone battles you've got tied up into that app market, this with the e-readers, you get a little tied up anyways into the e-reader market. Now, the Kobo book market seems to be going strong. I get emails from them all the time. Nook, of course, supported by Barnes & Noble, they're doing quite well. I can't say that I can compare directly between the two. The only thing that I can do between the two with the Nook and the Kindle is that looking at the catalog of books that they have, roughly comparable. I feel I'm so entrenched in the Amazon space and sphere for books anyways that I'm perfectly okay with my Kindle catalog selections that I have available, but you may feel differently. You'll want to look at that first. And of course, the Nook has got some color functionality to it. Honestly, it's one of the things that I like about my Kindle is that it's simple, it's easy on the eyes, there's no glare, there's no color I don't read anything with color pictures anyways. I don't know how many of you do. If you're still reading glossy cover, but I mean, maybe to your kids. I don't know. But, you know, that's actually, I do have books on there for my kids that we read. My daughter, who is 5, is really getting into the original Lewis Carroll versions of Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass with the original Tennille lithographs that are in that, and that actually shows up beautifully on the Kindle. So some good stuff there, just to mention that. If you're thinking about it, I definitely my completely opinionated and biased, and understand that I didn't actually have a choice when I was purchasing one. It was given to me as a gift, but my biased opinion on the matter is, for your money, Kindle is a great option. The other thing I like about the Kindle too is that it does have the web functionality, so I can get my emails, I can go through Google Reader, you can also too download, of course, any sort of news and things that you want as well. So good stuff. You know, on the flip front though, we talked about color and all. Now, there's not a lot separating anymore these laptops, these e-readers, and these pads that are coming out all over the place. Good stuff. iPad, of course, has just released the iPad 2, and I don't normally do this. You don't normally hear me do this on air. This just cracked me up so much. I've got to do it. Conan O'Brien, the other night after the iPad 2 was released, did a spoof on the iPad ads. I don't know if you've seen the iPad ads. If you haven't, I hope it gives you the same smile that it did to me, certainly. And I'm going to play this for you. It's about a minute or so. I'll jump right back in after. I can't resist. It's too funny. It deserves to be heard. Oh, and of course I'm having a little technical difficulty here getting the getting everything lined up. I believe that I've got it now. Here we go. Let's try that again.
The new iPad 2 yesterday, and they made the announcement on the Apple website. And I don't know about you, I saw the video. I personally think that the people at Apple are starting to get a little bit cocky. I do. Take a look.
iPad 2 is the culmination of literally 2 to 3 meetings. It's truly incredible how little we did. We knew that if we changed the color, put pictures of water droplets on the desktop, made it a little faster, added 2 holes with cheap cameras in them, then just kind of flattened it a bit, people would just go nuts.
One of my favorite things about the iPad 2 launch is that I get to keep this tight black shirt, which I think really pops against white backgrounds.
Is iPad 2 incredible? Yes. Are you believing what I am saying partially because I have a non-specific ethnic accent? Absolutely.
A lot of customers will say, what about me? I just bought the old iPad. And to you I say, f*** off.
And the tagline at the end from TeamCoco.com is, iPad 2, you'll buy it no matter what they say. Pretty much true, I think, for a lot of people. The iPad 2, though, does have some pretty neat stuff that is added to it. As mentioned facetiously in the Conan ad, there's a little bit faster. Yeah, it is a little bit faster. It's a little bit more space, a little bit sleeker, a little bit slimmer. I think a lot of people are going to be happy with it and happy that they waited maybe the extra month or two before picking one up. It is pretty amazing to me the prevalence of the iPad already throughout industry. Like I said, I think I mentioned this last week. You know, I've seen it. I've been in hospitals lately. I've seen it in hospitals used by doctors. I've seen it in business settings, which surprised me, not just by, you know, the young Turks and punks like myself, but actually by some of the older C-level executives and so on, really getting into the iPad and the functionality, the flexibility, and particularly the portability of it. Now, the thing that really makes it tough for me to say I want to embrace an iPad is it seems like an overgrown phone to me. And the problem that I have with my phone, of course, is it's great for phone calls. It's not so great if you want to type stuff. What I use my laptop for is for doing actual work. I'm not just usually sitting and surfing or watching a video or doing something like that with my laptop. I'm typing. I type rapidly. I know that I type probably faster than most other people out there that use their laptops do. And so I really rely upon that keyboard and the feel of the functionality of the keyboard in order to get a lot of my work done. And using a screen keyboard is not going to work. It just is not going to make me happy. I know that. I would wind up having, I know you can get a Bluetooth keyboard. You can get a Bluetooth mouse. You can throw that on there. You can get, a little stand so that it, sits up in front of you and you can type. But if you're going to do all that, why not just get a blasted laptop? I don't understand. It's probably one of those things like the Kindle where at some point I'll be forced to get one and then I'll become an instant lover. That may happen. I'm perfectly open to that as a possibility. If anyone wants to get me one so that we can test that theory, just send me an email at techtalk@wrlr.fm. I'll make sure we work out the details. and at any rate, I mentioned too about the different markets for these apps and so on. And of course, the iPad has access and availability to a lot of the Apple apps and, things like that. So you can grab some, what was the name of that application? Screaming Birds or something along those lines. I don't know what it's called, but, Suicide Birds. I don't know. If anyone's paying attention here on, Justin TV and wants to let me know, I'm sure it's something different than what I've got, but, the frustration is, of course, if you want to play Screaming Birds on your BlackBerry, you can't. If you want to play Screaming Birds on your Google Android, you may not be able to because of those app things. Well, one of the bigger barriers that has kept consumer market from adopting the BlackBerry. Now, BlackBerry RIM is huge, huge in enterprise applications. And because they're very, very solid, the email system in particular, and also to their security and lockdown features that you can control remotely, or not remotely, but you can control centrally in a corporate environment, is very strong. And that makes it very useful and very attractive, especially to enterprise level customers. Not so much for the consumer level. Now, they have started to break into some of it, or tried to, with different form functionality, things like this. It's a good solid product, don't get me wrong. But the thing that's really allowing the iPhone, it's really allowing particularly the Android phones to break into that consumer market and take it by storm so much, is the wealth of applications that are available cheaply and that are useful to consumers. Nothing like that exists for RIM right now. They have their marketplace. There's some stuff in there, but you compare it apples to apples to what's available for Android, what's available for the iPhone, and there's nothing like it. No comparison at all. And I don't know why, but RIM doesn't reduce the pricing on stuff. They should be doing things to promote that and make that happen. They're not doing that. What they are doing though, now this is interesting, is that they are talking about making Android apps available on RIM. That right now, I guess that the way that and this is just totally rumored here from some of the stuff that's going up on in Toronto, is that they will have an emulator within the BlackBerry OS, within the RIM OS, that will be available that you could run Android apps within. Now, that would open up a huge market for BlackBerry. And if the RIM comes out with some really consumer-friendly handsets and things, particularly for those people like me that just don't like that on-screen touchpad. RIM has got some great solutions where the keyboard kind of slides out from the bottom, or there's an actual hard keyboard on the phone itself, which is in a usable location and so on. You really, really would have a great hybrid phone. Now, the other option, of course, for RIM to go with is not to do an emulation kind of thing, but to start producing handsets which could run Android natively, or alternatively start making the BlackBerry RIM apps Android portable. And that's an option too. I find that less likely because of the way that RIM has always wanted to keep itself locked down, particularly for those enterprise customers. So I think though that within the next year here, we will see some BlackBerry RIM Android emulators that can allow you to use your Android apps on your BlackBerry phone. So that might be kind of cool stuff. There is, of course, some concern about that, however, because why? Well, the Android market is wide open. What does that mean? That's great, right? No. That's good, but there's a danger with that. The danger is, of course, that as you have an open Android application market, you also have these bad guys that want to get in there, and they'll put up applications that we like to call malware. And, you know, this is just a big problem. There's been a whole series this last week or so of malicious applications, these malware apps that appeared in the Android market. People are downloading them. They're using them. What do? They steal user data. They steal your phone number, your name, information. Who knows what they could grab off of there? I mean, I know on my phone, I keep my contact listings with people's emails, and I keep a lot of stuff on my phone. And if that was in danger of being grabbed and stolen, that's a problem. They also too have dial out apps. And this is like old school stuff. This is bad, nasty old school stuff. The kind of thing where you dialed, you got hooked on your modem. Some app was dialing to, you know, a 1-900 number, and so you'd get your phone bill at the end of the month, and it'd be $2,500. And some bozo wherever had configured your computer to do this using your modem. Well, the same kind of thing is happening with some of these Android applications and on these Google Android phones. So that's pretty scary. That is pretty scary. Now, of course, this is coming now at a time where Google has got some other issues going on too. And people are screaming about this, by the way. People are screaming. They want Google to go in and delete these apps out of the app farm for sure, but also too to see if they can remove them from their phones, you know, some way to get them off of their phone. And do they have the ability to remotely disable apps? It seemed at one point that they did, but now they're having a problem getting in and disabling these. Apple at one point disabled iPhone apps, and you know, and that caused a controversy. But now Google people, the people that own Android phones, are saying, you got to do it. Get in there, delete this app, and save us. We'll see how that all works out. Now, Google recently also too had a big issue with Gmail deletions. People were losing all of their Gmail. It was deleted. Now, if you're like me, and I am, I don't know what I would do. I would scream, and I would jump up and down, and I would tear my hair out, and I'd bang my head against a wall and be very, very, very upset. But apparently this is only affecting a very, very tiny number of people. They say just a fraction of its user base. The good news is they will likely be able to get all of their emails back, or most, if not all. There's just problems with it. And, you know, this is occasionally going to happen. They said the initial estimates of how many people this affected was around 0.29% of Gmail users, but then it went down to less than 0.08%. percent of all Gmail users. Now, I don't have specific numbers on how many Gmail users there are, though, but it's got, and this isn't Google Apps, this is only Gmail, but it's got to be millions and millions. So even only 0.08, that's still huge. That's just a gigantic amount of stuff. Now, I know we're going to be talking to Jay in a minute, and in fact, I should probably wait to speak to him because I know he's going to want to weigh in on this, being as he is associated with a company called Backupify, which actually can help you deal with this kind of thing. And in fact, Backupify, I think we can talk about this, has got a free app. I'm going to give him a call right now because I think we need to do this and get him on so he can speak a little more intelligently about it than I could, or maybe more in a more educated manner.
Hello.
Good morning. Good morning.
Mr. Kessler, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. I thought it was a good time to cut through to you. I was starting to talk about Google and Gmail and how they're starting to delete everyone's emails. And I was thinking that possibly there were some guys over at Backupify that had figured out a way to really promote their product in a sneaky, nasty way.
Oh, not us. not to the tune of, 30,000 new signups over the week. Yeah. Not at all.
and of course, you guys have, this is why I know I can talk about this on air and we're not stepping on any regulations. You guys have a free Gmail backup app, right, that you can do?
And for the ones that you pay for, we let you try them for free for a month, too. So, it's a no-risk, no-obligation test, the whole salesy 9 yards. But yeah, most of our customers use our free product.
Wow.
Which is our personal plan, which is up to 5 accounts, including Gmail. So, I think Twitter is actually the most popular thing people back up, which I find a little weird. Hmm. And then Gmail, and then I think it's a tie between Facebook and Google Docs. But apparently a lot of people are terrified of losing their Twitter feed, and I think at this point, with all the fail whales, you just would be used to losing your Twitter feed. How is this new to you?
And I'm not sure what you'd be putting up on Twitter that you'd be worried about losing. I haven't really seen Twitter as being a repository of important and valuable information. I mean, there's a lot of talk about winning and Tiger Blood right now on there. That we want to save that for posterity. But
if you follow me on Twitter and you don't like links, you're going to be unhappy because I put a lot of links in my Twitter feed.
Mm-hmm.
And people think that are you tweeting all day? No, I use a combination of tools, and I'll give some shout outs here. I use Google Reader and I use a service called Deliverate, DLVR.IT.
Mm.
And what I do is when I'm up in the morning with my daughter making her breakfast and watching cartoons with her, I'm actually on my phone or on my laptop going through my version of the morning paper on Google Reader.
Yep.
And anything I like, I hit share. But I don't think anybody would benefit from me sharing like 30 links at 7:30 in the morning Eastern. So what Deliverate does is it throttles my output. So it'll copy that to my LinkedIn and my Twitter and my Facebook, but it'll only do one link every 15 minutes. And there's other ways to set it, but that's sort of what I do. And if if it's only 4 links an hour and I share 30 links, that's all day. that goes out forever. So,
yep.
It's a little weird for me because, I'll pop in every now and then and actually say stuff in between my links on Twitter, but people will respond to me. And it's like, oh, that's awesome. Like, okay, which of my links are you responding to? Because I don't memorize the order I throttled them into delivery. So, like, great point. I saw that yesterday. Like, okay, let me go back and see what Deliverate put in my feed recently. Oh, you're talking about the Gmail outage. Okay, thanks.
Yep. Yeah, and people that follow me, it's very similar as well. I do a lot of the same thing. And yeah, you're right. The only reason I open up our paper is I'll occasionally grab our local paper anymore. But Google Reader, it really has got the connection of stuff. And yeah, and you're right. Most of the posts that I put on anymore are links to things that I've read that I think people would probably be interested in. My commentary on it, I won't do through Twitter. I'll do it via Facebook usually. That's where I'll add a few lines of commentary about whatever I think about the links, if I feel so inclined.
And that's a pretty typical behavior, actually. More and more you get into it, is that Facebook really is a social network. It's about socializing. I'm not wild about Facebook, but a lot of people like it, and it is designed around socialization. Twitter is much more of a broadcast medium. It's really not as much of a social network. It's almost like a throwback to the old Usenet newsgroup kind of stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. sort of how you curate your lists and sort of the subgroups you build around there. There's a whole lot of a common, you know, link exchange, and which I find fascinating. You know, I'm a tech guy, and I follow a few tech people, but I get most of them from their blogs and the news. Who I follow on Twitter are like science fiction writers and fellow sci-fi bloggers and artists and whatnot, and webcomic guys and people I know personally and a few folks like that. So my Twitter feed is a way geekier than like my Google Reader subscription list. And so I've sort of segregated out that way. But what I find really weird is the artists and the webcomic people and the authors I follow who get a real kick out of like me sharing news about like Google's inside trading policy. It's like, or best practices for managing online promotions. Like, I find it really odd. Like when like Larda Souza, who's a Twitter friend of mine, who is an artist on three different webcomics, like retweets my stuff and is like, "That's great. I didn't think of that." And it's like, "Wow, I didn't realize like international copyright law was a big deal to you, Lar, but I'm glad it is."
Yeah. You know, that is kind of interesting. You start to get a sense for, people's thoughts by what they retweet almost more than you do from what they tweet, particularly with people. I think above a certain level of, I don't know if you want to call it fame or whatever, there's not really a conversation that happens. It's much more of a monologue from whoever that user is. And so there's less, and Twitter doesn't really promote the idea of a dialogue. Twitter really promotes much more of kind of what you're talking about, either a straight up monologue of, say, I'm broadcasting and telling you what I'm doing or what my next big thing is so that you can do that and follow me and give me money for that too. Or it's kind of a push along of links or of retweets of what other people have said that you also found interesting.
Well, and I have seen conversations go on there, but it's interesting how that conversational dynamic works, because it feels a whole lot like a panel discussion at a convention or a conference, because, you know, like especially, you know, between the science fiction authors, they'll get into like theory of characterization or genre or, you know, inside baseball stuff about the publishing industry. And, you know, it'll be me and one or two people. Tobias Raquel is in the middle of this all the time, and he's unbelievably cool. Mm-hmm. And he responds to me, and I'm nobody, which I think is also awesome. But, you know, he and say, John Scalzi will start in on something, and then Kristen Catherine Rush will just jump in, or, you know, Jason Sizemore from Apex Magazine, or Sherry Priest, who just published Dreadnought, or Scott Westerveld will just sort of end up in it. And you get a four or five person sort of public debate about something for maybe 20 minutes and 30 tweets. And it's really interesting that you're sort of like, it's like wandering by and finding yourself in the middle of a masterclass debate on something that then just disappears.
Yeah.
But it's never like a personal, it's not like I am. They're very clearly, the statements they make are aware that they're publicly visible, and so they're making like, you know, sort of debate style statements.
Yes.
It's not really a conversation, but it is a conversation.
Yeah. It's a very, very different flavor. I mean, there's some of the same things go on with Facebook, which is much more designed around the idea of having that conversation and a dialogue between individuals that does stay around, and that it does allow for people to come back to it, you know, a day or two or a week even later, and all of a sudden re-comment on something that had kind of been dead for some of the others, and it livens it back up again. That really doesn't, it's not really possible to do that with Twitter. It's basically, it's either there and it's happening or it's gone and all that. So, and of course, you know, and I follow Scalzi not only on Twitter, but also on Facebook too. And you see that happening in his posts. He'll post things and all of a sudden there'll be conversation around it. And those do continue on for some time.
Right. Twitter is very immediate. If you're not watching the conversation happen, you've missed it. It's gone.
Yep.
Which to me is part of the advantage. But also it's, because, you know, what you can't do if you're a hardcore Twitter user, which I kind of am, is get caught up on what you missed. Like, you can't worry about that. Twitter is there for what's happening immediately in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook is more of an archive, which again is why I really don't get, and I'm not going to complain because it's good for us and more power to them. I don't get why everyone is so obsessed about, unless you're like a compliance officer and you're obligated to keep it, I don't understand this need for getting a complete forever archive of your Twitter other than just, you know, sentimental purposes, because I just don't understand it.
Yeah, yeah. The only things that come off the top of my head, like you said, compliance, but also too, the other thing that came off the top of my thought of that was for if you are promoting something, tracking your promotions and being able to use that on a kind of a timeline to say which ones had greater effect, possibly, but that's that's complete. And there's better ways to do it than that. You know, you'd be able to use the link itself as a method to do that. Yeah, I don't get it. If there's anybody out there that is doing backups of Twitter, if you could send a quick note and just tell me why you're doing it, I'd be really curious. We'll talk about it next week. TechTalk@WRLR.FM, or if you're listening live right now on Justin.tv/WRLR, just post up there. Oh, and someone mentioned that the title of the game I was looking for earlier, and this is before we called you, Jay, was Angry Birds. I was calling it Suicide Birds or Killer Birds or something. I just could not remember the name of it. It was Angry Birds was the big game, downloadable game that everybody was excited about.
And there's now a board game version of it, believe it or not. They've taken a mobile phone game and turned it into, first they ported it to like Xbox, and now it's available as an actual physical game, I think, from like Hasbro.
That's kind of like when they started taking video games and making them into movies. You know, it's like, no, this is wrong. That's the complete different. It's not supposed to go that way.
It doesn't work that way. I mean, some games you can do that, but you know, there was actually a great series of meme videos 3 or 4 years ago when video game movies like Resident Evil got really big. And they do like fake trailers for like Minesweeper the movie. It's just hilarious. Or Pac-Man the movie. And it's just, you know, they could completely, because there's just no story material there, and you just sort of make it all up, and it's really hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. I want to see Worms, the movie, you know? my kids have just gotten recently into, speaking of Worms, and the reason why it's on my mind, because my kids have recently gotten into Hedge Wars, which is, it is Worms. It's just the open source version of it with hedgehogs instead of little worms running around. And it's great, because my 11-year-old and my 8-year-old old, and now even my 5-year-old is learning this, and they can essentially play on about the same level and do okay and be competitive, but they're not having to fight over the keyboard or mouse, because you know, with the Twitch games and things, and with the turn-based system, it's very nice. I'll put it down as a cool side of the week this week. I'll link people out to that, but I haven't seen that. If that was on the smartphone, I'd pick one up. I'd pick one up of that immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to get us on yet another tangent, but I think Angry Birds just sort of shows, once again, like the Nintendo Wii principle of a simple fun game is almost always going to outperform, you know, a graphics heavy, complicated, in depth game. Now, it won't appeal to everybody, but it appeals to a whole lot more people and have a whole lot more staying power than, you know, I mean, everyone loves Call of Duty, but people will still play that Pac-Man. I don't think people will be playing Call of Duty 25 years from now.
Yep.
I really don't.
Yep. Yeah. No. I remember having that clearly, very clearly imprinted on me with the Need for Speed series and one of the original versions of the Need for Speed game. Graphics were not really great, but the game was a blast. We would just die in hysterics as people were crashing and things like this. The next version came out, graphics were so much better, speed of response was better, the physics were made better, and the game was terrible. It just was no fun at all. Not an enjoyable, at least not for us. It wasn't an enjoyable thing. And, you know, we kept going back to the old donkey block 16-bit graphic version that we had been playing for so long. And, I think that's true. And you see that with smartphones and with the casual gaming, you know, the graphics is really – way, way low down on the list as far as playability of these games.
Absolutely. Well, I have friends that still to this day will drag their old Nintendo 64 out of the closet and play GoldenEye rather than play one of the more modern, like, online first-person shooters, just because GoldenEye is so basic and so fun and almost goofy in some of the weapon levels they use. And it's just, they got it right, and it sticks around when you get that level right. And no amount of graphics or music or level complexity will ever change that.
Yep. That's exactly right. You know, we should probably actually get back to our stated purpose for calling you, which would of course be to talk about geek trivia. And I'm just pulling up right now our question from last week, which was about equipment that's getting doled out to schools and wherever else, like really, really cheaply after they're retiring the Discovery mission.
Yeah, like the question was, they're donating all the stock of space shuttle equipment because they're not going to use it anymore. But they set aside one particular type of equipment for schools and universities, and this particular equipment is one to a customer, but you can buy it for less than $50. And the answer are the thermal tiles from the belly of the space shuttle. They're selling 7,000 of them, and you can buy them for $23.40 a piece.
Wow.
That's mostly covering the shipping and handling. They're actually giving you the tile for free, but because they're ceramic, they have to pack them a certain way and make sure they get there, plus they're collectible, so they're like insured in transit. So the $23.40 is really just the shipping cost, but The tile is free, and for basically $25, you get one of the angled tiles from the belly of the space shuttle that can stand up to like 6,000 degrees.
awesome, man, that is pretty cool. That is a pretty neat neat keepsake to have and something to put, especially like you say, in a science department at a school or something along those lines. I could definitely see that. You buy up a couple hundred of them and roof your house, and then you don't have to worry about the
You just gotta come up with a couple hundred fake .edu separate addresses. You just gotta spoof a bunch of fake universities and you're fine, because it's one institution. So, but after that, that would be like the ultimate ego statement if you found some way to buy up all of those tiles and then like tiled a terracotta house somewhere and say, I now have a fireproof house.
That's right.
Insurance break.
Nuclear proof as well.
That's
as long as it doesn't land right on.
I don't know. I think these are all the surplus tiles. I don't think they're giving you the tiles off the actual space shuttles, for one, because I think they're going to leave those on the space shuttle for their display. But two, I gotta think that those are actually mildly radioactive, the ones that have actually been in space.
Oh, good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, you're probably right. I can't imagine they would strip the equipment down. You're right. Do you happen to know how many tiles there would be on the space shuttle?
I don't know. I mean, they got 7,000 in surplus, and I got to think that there's some fraction of that on any given shuttle.
Yeah.
I mean, I can put the math on it or look it up, but these tiles are like 6 or 7 inches square. So, I mean, that's not that big. And the space shuttle is the like longest nose-to-tail supersonic aircraft ever built. I'm going to do a bonus trivia here. It's the only supersonic aircraft that's long enough that when it breaks the sound barrier, you hear both sonic booms. Because actually, every other aircraft really does make two sonic booms when the air barrier breaks the nose and then collapses over the tail. But no one can ever audibly hear the two booms because most supersonic craft aren't long enough. The space shuttle is. You can audibly hear the nose boom and the tail boom separately, like they're a half second apart because it's that big.
Wow, man. Yeah, it is huge. I've only seen pictures, sadly. I have never seen one in real life. It's one of the things I like to. WRLR sent a couple of people down to one of the shuttle launches I think it was about 6 months ago or so. No, maybe a little bit longer than that. Yeah, it was sometime early spring or late spring, early summer. And the pictures they brought back were just phenomenal. I was so green with envy that they were able to get down there and do that. It's just some very cool stuff. It is a sad time, a sad thing that stuff is happening here, and that they're moving on. But it's good to see they're spreading the wealth with these tiles, anyways, and all that. So if you are at an EDU address, take a look up on that and see if you can get one for your school. And what should we be thinking about for this coming week?
Well, first I wanted to give you a heads up that for the next Saturday I will not be able to spend some time with you because I will be going to my nephew's 6th birthday party, so I will be unavailable. But for the week after that, I have a question which I think should be fun for everybody. March 8th will be the 33rd anniversary of the debut of the original radio plays of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. We'll have an H2G2 question. Douglas Adams, the late creator of Hitchhiker's Guide, specifically picked a rather obscure piece of music from a world-famous and still world-famous Hall of Fame rock band to be the theme to the original radio plays. And rearrangements of that piece have been used for pretty much every other subsequent, like, audio or video version of Hitchhiker's Guide. So the question is, what Hall of Fame rock band lent their music to be the theme of the original Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio play?
Ooh, great question. Man, I'm trying to, your last point where it was, it's been used in all of the, I recently saw the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the movie that came out a couple of years ago, and rewatched that. I saw that in the theaters, and I'm trying to recreate the theme song in my head, and I can't put a finger on it. I'm going to have to go back now and listen to it to see if I can figure it out. That's a great
question.
Probably
won't, because other than the original radio play, they didn't use the original album version. They paid another artist to cover it, I think probably for licensing reasons, just because it was too expensive to keep using the original cut. But also bear in mind that this is in a Hall of Fame rock band, but the original piece of music is all instrumental. Like, there were no lyrics to this song. This was like one of those, we're going to tack on an instrumental to some one of our albums, and Douglas Adams liked it and said... And for extra bonus points, just to help you guys out, the reason he picked it is it had a banjo in it, and that sounded hitchhikery.
Wow.
So Hall of Fame rock band, instrumental piece with a banjo in it. Which rock band would that be?
Boy, well, that does narrow it down a little bit, actually. there's not a lot of rock bands from that period of time that would have been using banjos, but... I have no clue. That is a great question. That is a great question. Well, Jay, I won't hold you on any longer. Have a great time at your the birthday party you're going to next week. We will miss you for sure. And I'll put up on the podcast again about Backupify and to let people know that there are free options if you do get worried about your Gmail or Facebook or Twitter for some reason. Then
they've got to explain this Twitter thing. We're glad you're doing it. I do it just for reflex, but we'd love to know why. We really, really would love to know why.
You got to start sending out some surveys. I think it's time for the Backupify survey of users to go out.
That's a good point. Absolutely.
Yeah. but you get 2 gig for free, and there's other options as well. So if you want more information on that, you can go to either backupify.com or also, of course, I know that you have links to it from your website, jgarman.net, where there's a lot more J there too.
Absolutely, including reproductions of my Twitter feed for some ironic reason.
Oh, there we go. So, well, you could back that up.
Excellent. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Jay. Take care.
All right. Bye.
As always, fantastic to hear from our good friend Jay. Jay saves us every week. You know, every week I get started, I'm like, well, what am I going to talk about for an hour today? There's always a lot of things going on, of course, but it's so much more interesting when you get someone as knowledgeable and interesting as our good friend Jay Garman. Go to jgarman.net and check him out when you have a moment. He's got some great stuff on there. Of course, right now, speaking of great stuff, I can't even begin to tell you the number number of great things that we have going on here at WRLR. So instead of trying to do it myself, you know what I'm going to do? I am going to play you just a few spots and things. We're going to take a little break here, and I'll be back in under five. And when I come back, we've got two big things happening. Cool Sites of the Week. You don't want to miss it. I've already mentioned a couple we're going to hit, but I've got a few more for you. And then also, too, the podcast-only Song of the Week. I think you're going to like it this week. So stay tuned. You're listening to Tech Talk, and this is...
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
As you may know, WRLR is a nonprofit, all-volunteer station. All of us here give our time, resources, and energy to provide the community, and the world for that matter, with unparalleled entertainment and information. Our motto, radioactive means involvement, our involvement alone isn't enough. There are operating costs that go well beyond our immediate resources. We need you. Community involvement is everyone's involvement. Please go to our webpage, WRLR.fm, and click on donate. The rest is easy. The amount is up to you. Our budget is like yours. Every contribution is an important part of keeping us all radioactive.
Come listen to the sounds, the coolest sounds around on Musical Memory.
You'll hear your favorite tune.
From noon till 2 o'clock, you'll hear the station rock. On Musical Memories
on Monday afternoon.
So take a break and linger for just a while at 98.3 on your dials with Alan Burr.
The Music Gallery is a proud sponsor of WRLR and since 1974 has provided musicians of all levels a service whose primary concept is to serve the guitar player. Frank Leona presents his gallery of guitars from Gibson, McPherson Acoustic to Fender, Custom Shop, Master Built Guitars, and more. His staff also provides a full-service shop to handle all of your needs, including full-service plex scanning. Knowledge, attention to detail, and respect are the foundations of the Music Gallery. The Music Gallery is located in Highland Park on Green Day Road, one block south of Half Day Road, and is open Monday through Saturday to serve you. For more information, their telephone number is 847-432-6350, or go to our station's website at WRLR.fm for details.
The Law Office of Gary N. Foley, located in Round Lake Beach, is a proud sponsor of WRLR and is there for all your legal needs. Gary N. Foley can help with bankruptcies, real estate, estate planning, and traffic law. The office is located at 1919 Route 83 in Round Lake Beach. The phone number is 847-986-2999. The website is www.garyfoleylaw.com and email is garyfoley@hotmail.com.
Even if you heard it enough, say it again. All right, we are back. This is Tech Talk on BRLR's Michael Tech Talk Kessler. What were we saying we were going to have? What was that again? Oh yeah, that's right. Ah, there we go. I'm spinning the wrong dials here. I'm like thinking, boy, that sure is loud today. Maybe it's just me. It felt a little loud. That's right, though. It's time for Cool Sites of the Week. Here we go. There's always just a huge number of them. Lots of great stuff going on the interwebs all the time. It's really tough to pick stuff out. But we heard some really great ones today, actually, while we were talking earlier. So I'm gonna make those official Cool Sites of the Week so that you can find them online. Line on our podcast at techtalk.wrlr.fm. Email me cool sites of the week that you may have at techtalk@wrlr.fm. And also, too, you can give us a phone call, 847-984-0847. That phone number will not ever be picked up, but you can leave me a message there and we'll play it. We'll play it on air or I'll use your information. I'll try to remember to mention who it was that I got that from. So if you want a little bit bit of radio fame, you can just call in and do that. Hey, okay, cool sites of the week here. Now, Jay mentioned, well, Jay, actually, we had a couple with Jay. I'm going to bring it up again. I think we've made this a cool site of the week in the past. I'm going to do it again. Backupify. It's free, up to 2 gig of stuff that you want to save and store online. Go and check that out. Cool stuff. You can back up your Gmail, back up your Facebook, back up your Twitter, back up all your social online cloud stuff, and never have to worry that you're going to get that notice when you log into Gmail or to Facebook or whatever that says, we're sorry, your account has been deleted. You can always get it back. Or if you make a mistake and delete something by accident, you can always go back and recover it. So good stuff, good stuff. You might want to check that out if you use the clouds and the interwebs quite a bit for your daily life. Another good one that Jay mentioned too, also free, also cool stuff. Deliver It, DLVR.IT. Really good stuff. Now, if you're like me and you do just a ton of stuff, you're in Twitter, you're in LinkedIn, you're Google Readering, you're Facebooking, you're whatever it is, you can take anything that you're sharing and that you're doing from your RSS feeds and blast that feed right to Twitter, to Facebook, to LinkedIn, Google Buzz, whatever it is that you want to do. And not only that, but you get real-time social stats on all of your links, friends, retweets, all that good stuff. So if you're like me and you want to know what's going on and you want to know what other people are doing with what you're doing, this is a good way to do it. Deliver IT, DLVR.IT. Great website. Now, I mentioned too, just for fun, if you're old enough to have loved and played Worms, or perhaps you're more familiar with the original version of Worms, which is called Scorched Earth, and which was a shareware and then freeware game out there. It's a turn-based destruction game. Essentially, you aim and you shoot, and there's gravity and physics involved and wind, and you have all these crazy weapons, and you have a little army of either worms or whatever that you're trying to blow up and all this. Well, there's a new version of that's open source. It's free. It's called Hedge Wars. Very similar feel to Worms 2. You've got a lot of options and things. My kids love this game. I can't explain it. I love it myself. So this is actually kind of our family game night. We don't play Monopoly. We don't play Twister. We get out Hedge Wars. And then you can set it up. You can play on a LAN game. It's got portable too. You can do, you put it onto a little USB fob and bang, away you go wherever you're at. You can always play a couple of quick rounds of Hedge Wars. So fun stuff. Check that out. It's at hedgewars.org. H-E-D-G-E. Like a hedgehog. Hedgewars.org and download that for free. Lots of stuff. They have online stuff too. It's amazing. Now this next cool site of the week, a special thanks to my good friend Lisa out in Minnesota. She heard recently I was training for a half marathon. Now anybody that listens, you know I've been into physical fitness and things like this for quite some time. But you know what? I'm not an endurance guy. Oh, you know what? I'm not really very fast either. I don't really do either of these things. I just kind of do what I do. So this is a big deal for me that I'm training for this half marathon, and I'm hoping to finish it some, you know, close to the same day that I started anyways. That's going to be coming up in April. That's up in Wisconsin. Well, Lisa turned me on to an even cooler race. There is one in Illinois. I'm going to skip it this year. I'm hoping to get going on it next year, though. It's called the Warrior Dash, and it's described as the craziest freaking day of your life. It's an obstacle course, 5K, jumping over fire, running through woods, through rivers, across hills, climbing up things, falling down other things, mudslides. It looks just absolutely insane. And I know this is not related to tech at all, but I am so excited about this thing. I had to tell you about it. I don't know if there's some kind of charity involved with it. There probably is. I don't care. I think I just want to do it so that I can say that I did. Go to warrior-dash.com. If you are crazy like me and you want to do this next year, 2012, they haven't posted the the locations yet, but I know this year in Illinois, they did it about an hour out of Chicago. If you are interested in doing it in either Illinois or Wisconsin, send me an email, techtalk@wrlr.fm. Let's coordinate this. Maybe we can come up with a Tech Talk team if I get more than one or two people doing it, and we'll just have a blast. Or we'll do a WRLR team. I'll try to get a few other people around here that I know are interested in doing stupid things and see if we can make it happen. So check that out. Don't forget, techtalk.wrlr.fm is where you can find all this information. You can also too download us usually a few days after we produce the show. On iTunes, go to iTunes and just do a quick search and you'll find us right there. So, you know what time it is now, of course, is I got to pick a song for us to do a podcast only song of the week. This is going to be a little bit more mellow than some of the ones that I've done recently. I like this too. Occasionally I gotta get a little mellow. Dan Mangin, just a cool indie guy, probably haven't heard of him. He's got an album out called Robots versus Indie Queens, and one of the tracks off of that is called Robots, and that's what I'm going to leave you with. Some nice guitar work on there. Dan Mangin, neat guy. If you haven't ever heard of him, check that out. Thank you so much to everyone that's listening. Shouts out to all of our listeners, whether they be in Australia, St. Louis, maybe we got some people from the CLC listening today. If so, shouts out to you too. Always, of course, thanks to Jay Garman for joining us. Supposedly, possibly, theoretically, we might get our good friend Dave Sparky Saganaki back on and on the air. So we'll hope for that. Otherwise, stay tuned to WRLR. Take care. Have a great week, everyone. We'll catch up with you next Saturday.
I don't know what you've been told, but I don't get out much these days. Waking young and feeling old, the days are no longer my own to piss away the waking. Don't let them go. Don't let them go. To waste the fire in my eye is fleeting now. Your robot heart is bleeding. Try to be the robot king and settled for a robot voice. Ring the bells that still can ring and sing your stupid head off to the ones who are not listening. Don't let them go. Don't let them go. To waste the fire in my eye is bleeding now. Your robot heart is bleeding out. And I spent half of my customer service line, flaws in the design, a sign of the times, and that little voice in the back of your mind just wants you to know, just hopes that you know robots need love. They want to be loved by you. They want to be loved by you. They want to be loved by you.